The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world, this is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. The quickest way to make an atheist mad is to talk about evolution in common everyday terms. The quickest way to make an atheist or an evolutionist a little unsettled is to describe some of the evolutionary processes in terminology that almost anyone can understand. You know, it's amazing the disagreement and disparity between various ideas of evolutionists themselves. Almost no two will agree on every last respect of the theory. And, of course, there are many dozens and even hundreds of theories that are attendant upon the major doctrine of all education today, which is evolution. Be that as it may, I received a letter from a man who had taken great exception to some of the things I'd been saying about various creatures surviving or not surviving based upon fantastic leaps. Some of them may be like lizards over cliffs, or at least some kind of a leap. Now, even evolutionists talk about jumps or leaps, and they refer, of course, to their studies in genetics, to things such as mutations in various creatures, and they talk that over a long period of time, perhaps certain small or slow leaps must have occurred. But this letter took great exception to some of the things I had been saying about woodpeckers having to succeed the very first time. And a number of programs on The World Tomorrow, I had been talking about the very highly developed and specialized apparatus, equipment, camouflage, instinct, etc., of all types of creatures, which had to be perfectly developed to enable them to survive in their present environment with their present food supply under present conditions. Now, the evolutionist immediately jumps behind his old dodge of millions of years and claims he does not preach in any sudden leaps. Well, that's true. The average evolutionist does not say that a lizard sprouted wings. He says that gradually over millions and billions of years, scales or various overlapping segments of hide or armor plating grew into feathers. But now, you know, this sort of bugs you a little bit, doesn't it? It doesn't give you a little bit of a headache to try to imagine exactly how that would occur. And so I've been trying to ask a few questions of evolution. Not that I expect them to answer, let's clear the air. Now, wait a minute, I don't want to get in an argument about evolution. Because, you see, I teach evolution. Oh, I have all the most up-to-the-moment books on evolution. Three libraries, plus a home library that is quite replete with books on evolution. A letter told me that I probably hadn't read this certain book, but I had perused this book, and of course we teach from it. We teach from a large number of books on evolution in the Ambassador Colleges. And we talk about all the aspects of evolution, but we also show the flaws, the fallacies, the perhapses, the maybes, the we are coming to believe, the suppositions, the it is assumed, and the voracious appetite for people to swallow a lot of perhapses, maybes, or it could be supposed theories and the like in order to come up with an explanation of a fantastic orderly universe, the earth and all creatures upon it, your brains, your gray matter, the marvelous ingenuity, the mind of man, and you can't discount emotion. And you can't discount all of the sense of sight, of sound, of touch, of feel, of taste, all of the tremendous sensory perception of man, and maybe even, as some people say, extra sensory perception. So I've been asking a few questions of evolutionists, not, of course, expecting them to answer, but just so you, as the average man on the street, would take a good long look at it, which you probably have never done before. Now, the theologian, or at least the average professing church-going Christian, assumes there is a God. He assumes that all these churches, all these religions, all these beliefs of people couldn't be wrong. He assumes such preponderance of opinion, such great weight of authority, and he says, therefore, there must be something to this thing of religion. On the other hand, evolutionists begin with the assumption that the universe came into existence without a divine creator. They don't even dwell very long on that idea. And really, I mean, it's a fact, they do not. Now, many of them will say, well, now, wait a minute, we've looked at it from the three basic tenets of the possibility that it all came into existence gradually, or the possibility that it had a divine maker, or the possibility that it just doesn't even exist, that it's all a sort of a transitory nothingness. Now, you've heard people sit around and philosophize that we don't exist, that the earth doesn't exist. Well, let's not bother them. Let's you and I talk about things that do exist, and prove a few things to ourselves. Can you explain intelligence without a source, without a creator? Can you explain instinct without someone who built into these little creatures all about us, and some of them quite large creatures, the instinct that they possess? Have you ever studied it for yourself? Have you ever asked a few questions, simple questions, about the environment around you? You know, the Bible commands and orders people to prove all things. That's what I do constantly on this program, is to encourage people to prove what I say by checking. You can go to your public library, you can read some of the most up-to-the-moment books and writings on evolution, and I encourage you to. As a matter of fact, that ought to make atheists and evolutionists happy. Maybe I'll sell a few books for them. Because I say that any book on evolution that has ever been written is filled with so many flaws, so many gaps, so many unanswered questions, that it is really quite embarrassing when you begin to look into it. Now, wait just a minute, you evolutionists who might be listening. Wait just a moment. Before you get real angry, let me tell you this. You are more than welcome to your theory. And I know that evolutionists and atheists are not necessarily ignorant or uneducated people. As a matter of fact, the man who wrote the letter to me said he was working toward his doctorate. I suppose that was to impress me, not that it necessarily could have meant that he was trying to impress me. I already have my doctorate. He's working for his. Well, congratulations. It'd be nice if he makes it. But it didn't necessarily impress me, because I am very much aware that evolution and all of the evolutionary sciences are the product of educated minds. They are not the product of necessarily uneducated minds. They're the product of this world, of this world's educational philosophy, of this world's scientific and educational approach to knowledge. They are the product of educated minds. I didn't go further to clarify that. I merely said I acknowledge that evolution is the product of educated people, not of those who have never studied. It is the product of people who have gone to great lengths to attempt to substantiate the theory of evolution. But I do want to say this. Evolution is still a theory. God is not. The Bible is not. I come to you on the basis of fact, on the basis of proof, on the basis of tangible, obvious, corroborative, substantiable, logical, rational proof that there is a great, all-wise, divine, creator being who gives you every breath of air you breathe, who gave you your mind. Oh, I know you're the product of your parents. You figure out how come male and female. You figure out where the first man and first woman came from. Try to figure it. You always look around and you see male and female and everything. I don't care whether it's little spores on the forest floor or whether it's the plants that have to have both sexes built within themselves. You look at the little childhood story that maybe your parents had to tell you. We always joke about it as parents, about telling the boys and girls about the birds and bees. You know, they don't usually get around to telling them much about birds, but they do always tell them about bees. Why? Well, because without bees, all of the trees, the fruit trees, many of the flowers and the plants that need pollination simply would not survive. That's why not only bees, but other types of insects and creatures that aid in this, as well as winds that carry pollens and pollinate different plants. Everything has a certain sex. Everything is dual or double. You don't find any triple sexes where it takes three to tango, as they say. They used to say it takes two to tango. Well, you look around in the orderly environment of ours and you find all these fantastic and myriad creatures, and you find the sexes, male and female. Now, where did you come from? I mean, aside from the fact that you could probably study your genealogy, go back a few generations until you lose track. Or like many people say, well, yes, if there are Negro people in the United States or the West Indies or somewhere like that, they may have taken their name from the slave master or his neighbor or someone else anciently. And they can't really trace their genealogy very much further than that, if they can even trace it that far. Many people lose track after three or four generations, and they're not quite sure. Six, eight, 10, 12 generations, they lose track. Others can trace their genealogy, like the royal family of Great Britain, all the way back to David in the Bible, and from there, from David clear to Adam. But here, of course, is the point where the great disagreement comes up. Now, don't begin to think that I'm getting ready to debate the problem with somebody. I wouldn't begin to debate evolution with anybody. Neither would I argue religion with anybody. I wouldn't waste the time of day. I've got more important things to do. And furthermore, I am given an order, an absolute command by my boss, the one who hires me, not to indulge in debates and arguments and dissensions over words of semantics and terminology and just what do you mean and how do you state the theory and do you leave out this little fact or the other one. No, I wouldn't even begin to argue religion or atheism with anyone. Everybody is welcome to his own belief, and I'm not trying to empty the classrooms in all the modern educational institutions where they're endeavoring to study paleontology. Nothing of the sort. I encourage every paleontologist to study it deeply, but also to question, to ask, to say what, where, how, why, who, when, and to demand an intelligent, at least a rational answer to every one of those questions involving everything that he studies. But if you, the layman, would quit assuming that you need to leave everything upon which you base your entire way of life to the experts, that your approach, your outlook, your desires, your entire motive and way of life is guided by someone else. And really, I know we all like to say we're nonconformists, but when you get right down to it, very few people are nonconformists. You look at some of the teenagers today, they're trying to become nonconformists, so what do? They immediately conform to a very tight little fraternity of motorcycles, jack boots, leather jackets, what have you. Or they'll pick another fraternity of somebody lugging around a big guitar with a string on it. He probably doesn't know how to play a single tune in the thing, but he lugs it around because it's part of the image. Incredibly dirty hair, bearded face, snaggle tooth, smells like he hasn't bathed in at least a year, and he decides that he's going to escape the majority. He's going to stand aside from the rush of life and sort of hoot and holler and snort derisively at all the rest of the poor boobs who are entrapped and enslaved by their modern environment. Have at it. It's fun, I suppose, for a while, but it's also very disillusioning. And sometimes people who do this feel trapped. As a matter of fact, I have a picture from a paper right here in front of me of a fellow who went the long ears, several better. And this is a fact. Here's the picture. His name is Edouard. He is a Frenchman. He began to grow long hair, and I don't know how long this took him, and I guess it's his own. It says it is. He has hair down to his knees. Here it is. It's hanging here. He's almost totally covered with it. This guy wouldn't need to wear much more than a loincloth. He's almost fully dressed. He started as a joke character in a parody of Mop Top Pop Stars. But he began to grow hair, and it got longer and longer over a period of years, and he was a big sensation. As a matter of fact, what he said, as he explained, was, quote, "We first decided to make fun of some of the sillier French pop stars, and suddenly I was popular. It's been frightening," he said. End of quotation. Isn't that a funny one? He actually was on the stage to satirize and to make fun of some of the pop singers of the day, but he went over with such a bang with his longer hair. And, of course, he's just like a lot of other people. He likes money. And money came pouring in, and he said, "It's frightening. I'm famous all of a sudden." Kind of like the confession of Picasso, you know. He said that he was sort of a satirical treatise of his day, that he was like taking the pulse of the way people think. He said he was a mountebank, a charlatan in a sense, but he was paid to be. He said, actually, he could be a good artist. But he painted these silly, idiotic scenes because he found, and in his own words, he said, the less people understand what they're looking at, the more they admired it. And so he admitted that he did this for money. It's kind of funny, at least it seems funny to me. Now, maybe I have a bizarre sense of humor, I'll admit, that when somebody looks at some oddball painting and they don't see an honest thing in it, but it is a bunch of, you know, some people have experimented by pouring paint in the tail of their dog and calling him, and unbeknownst to the dog, he was wagging his tail on a piece of canvas. I saw one in a museum where it was all, was it white or was it red? I think it was all white. I think it was a huge, big board. It was 4 feet by 10 or 12 feet. It was a huge thing with one stripe, one little narrow stripe down the side of it. And underneath it was labeled Adam. Now you could have labeled it red stripe on white background. Would have made just as much sense to me. Or white background on red stripe would have made a lot of sense too. Or you could have said, what would you have called that? I don't know what else you could label it beside that, as a matter of fact. You could have turned it upside down. It would have looked identical, except the stripe on the opposite side, because it was rectangular. No, I can't even think up a better title for it, so I don't know, other than Red Stripe on a White Background. Now, white backgrounds and red stripes don't do anything especially for me, so I wasn't real attracted to the painting, but I was attracted by the name, and it said Adam. Now, this got me. It took me a while. I decided, well, it was futile. Why waste time? I wouldn't figure it out in a million years, so I gave it up and left. But this, it's funny, isn't it, the way people call things art, and some of the people trying their very level best to jump out of their own environment in order to become nonconformist, but to do this, they become conformist to a minority, to a different group. It's about time you stood aside a little bit and became a nonconformist, but not by conforming to someone else, to some minority. It's about time you stood aside, as it were, from the passing tide of life and took a good long look at some of the whys and wherefores of what you believe, of your taste in music, literature, art. Now, of course, it's easy to say, well, what business is it of yours? And I would answer, none whatsoever. I'm not even making it my business. But you should make it your business, at least. It is your business, isn't it? It is the business of those who are your immediate acquaintances. It is the business of your parents, your teachers, those around your immediate environment. It is the business of your husband, your wife, your children, your relatives, your friends. Now, you may be such a recluse, you'll say, no, it isn't even their business. I still say, it is your business. And your happiness is at stake. Now, some people can say, what, me be happy? And this is all well and good if they like to delude themselves that much, but in their private moments, they will admit they want happiness and they're reaching out for it. They're grasping for it just like anyone else. You're living in a world of a lot of unhappiness. A world of the lack of purpose, a world of futility and frustration, a world where not very many people seem to know where they're going. And it's about time you did stand aside for a moment and wonder why. And wonder, where is it all leading? Where are we going? Are we as human beings doomed to extinction? Are you people in Great Britain doomed to become a fourth or fifth or sixth-rate power? Your leaders are saying today you've already had it. That's right. I'm no politician. I'm just exactly like the rest of you people, wondering what's happening in the world, except that I have the Bible on which to base my approach, on which to base my expectation toward the future. I happen to have proved the Bible is absolutely true. Now, you can scoff at that, but if you don't know the Bible, if you haven't read the Bible, then you are not entitled to a scoff. Otherwise, you're kidding yourself. You're not kidding me. I can't hear you. And you can turn me off anytime you get ready. That's your free privilege. You are a free moral agent. But my friends, it's about time you gave it a try. It's about time you thought for a moment about some of the serious things of life. Because in Great Britain, the death knell is being sounded on a nation which once boasted the sun never sets on the British Empire. It's about time some of you people began to stop and think about it a little bit. And so I've been asking questions of atheists because I want to encourage people to think. Am I trying to change the course of the world? Far from it. I've explained that in past programs. I will again in the future. That's not my purpose. I have nothing to sell. I'm not trying to start a new movement. I'm not trying to get you to march somewhere or to get on the bandwagon against this or against that or for this thing or for the other thing. I'm merely trying to get you to think as a human individual and to appraise your own situation, to ask about your own education, your background, your environment. Why do you believe the things you do? What about your education, your philosophy, your religion, your morals? What about your home life? What about the way you rear your children? What makes you pick one product instead of another one? What is your governing decision involving the way you live? On what do you base it? Your own private set of moral values or someone else's? Have you ever asked yourself basic questions? Who are you? Where are you going? Why do you draw breath? What is ahead in this world for you? Or are you possibly caught up in the bizarre game of let's pretend, like much of the rest of the world? Here are all these problems. They do embarrass us. We don't like to think of them. It's a lot easier to plug ourselves into this modern electronic world and to hear the jangling sounds. It's a lot easier to escape. I noticed an advertisement for a caravan, and as they call it, a trailer house, in the United States. It was in Great Britain, and it was in a leading magazine. And they said, here's the best way to escape. And the whole idea was to get away from it all. These very words are used on television and in advertising because people are just unable to face life. They want to get away from it all. It's about time you admitted that very likely your own private lot in life is nowhere near so happy as you wish it were. There is something you can do about it, but only if you're willing to come to grips with the biggest questions in your life. Is there a God? Is there a purpose in human life? Does that God reveal himself to mankind? Is there a divine revelation to you as a personal human being that tells you exactly where you should be going? Are there any laws that govern human conduct, that govern business, how to pick and choose a mate, how to date and with whom and at what age? Are there laws that govern your diet? Are there laws that govern your mental and your moral diet? Are there laws that govern your physical body? Are there laws of health? Are there laws that have to do with your dealings with someone else on a personal social level? Are there laws, in short, that describe and point out the best way to live life to get the most rewards from it? To enjoy life abundantly, deeply, and fully. You're living in a time when people as never before are seeking heightened perceptions. An intensified enjoyment of material pleasures, where we seek to have, as we call it, thrills. Many of the songs talk about thrill me and what a thrill it was. It was a plaintive, almost, it was a horrible song. It nearly brought tears to my eyes and made me feel forlorn and almost lost. Good music, I thought, in a way, but it was the words that got me. This person was dead and was thinking that if I have to tell the angels what are my choicest memories, it will have been the moments I spent with you. The thrills that you gave me. And I thought, oh, ghastly, what a hopeless, plaintive song that is. Here, if you get the point, is someone whose life is over. And that was the idea, when my life is over. How can someone take such a precious thing as life, which consists of time, your opportunities in life, your innate abilities, your own personal body and mind, and as if with one fell swoop, a casual toss of the hand, say, after I'm dead, I will really think that I'll tell the angels the choicest moments of my life were those few precious moments that I spent with you when you thrilled me. Is there something more than this, or are these wistful, plaintive notions of reaching out at life, of thinking of this moment and that, which is always bittersweet and never quite complete, always sort of half-fulfilled, never quite satisfying, that we are doomed to live these few years, experiencing this, thinking that, saying and doing the other thing? And it's all over so rapidly. People who are 60, 70, and 80 tell me that life has gone by so fast. And isn't that a fact? And every year you live, the faster the next one seems to go by. But is there any purpose in living? Can you discover there is a creator who has actually set these laws not as a great yoke of bondage on your back to bear you down under a tremendous, insurmountable, mountainous burden of woe to make your life gray, drab, and uninteresting? I'll tell you what makes people's lives unhappy and uninteresting. Their own sins, their own mental psychoses, neuroses, complexes, and the like. I'll tell you what makes people unhappy. Their wrong set of moral values. Their wrong diet, mental and physical diet. Their wrong spiritual diet. Their rotten attitudes and idiotic ideas. Their crazy tastes and bizarre opinions. I'll tell you what makes them unhappy. Conditions in the world make them unhappy. The attitude of other people makes them unhappy. I'll tell you what makes them unhappy. They seize, they reach out, they hope to achieve what they feel is the epitome of all pleasure. You see people of poor income, and they have a hoot and a derisive snort for someone with great income. A lower-income person will look at someone of higher income going by in a large and expensive automobile, dressed up, and he will sneer. But actually, he's only sneering because he actually thinks and desires that this would be the height of life, and he wishes with all of his being that he had a little bit of it. But if he had it, would he be happy? How many success stories do you know of? Do you ever just sit around and think about your own private situation, where you're going, what you're going to do tomorrow, what the world looks like to you when you get up in the morning? You too fat? Are you too skinny? You got poor health? You're going to visit the doctor again? You're worried about the next operation? What about your teeth? Are they in good shape? Your hair falling out? You're worried about how to smell good to your girlfriend, so you listen to all the ads? You're worried about the head shrinker? You're going to go and lie on the proverbial leather couch and get another talking to and find out what's wrong with you? Psychiatrists themselves admit that many of them probably need to visit each other. Where are you going? What's life look like from your vantage point? I don't care whether you live in Liverpool or London. I don't care whether you're listening in Topeka, Kansas or Buffalo, New York. It's about time you did step aside from your daily way of living and ask yourself a few straightforward and simple questions. Does God exist? Write for that booklet. Can you prove the Bible is true? Write for that booklet. If you want to study it, I mean to know how to study it, and ask yourself the beginning question, why study the Bible? Why bother turning to a book like the Bible today? I'll just say this, there's only one place left for you to turn. There's no place else to go, is there? Because you know as well as I that no one else has the answers. If there is no God, nobody has the answers, and you know it, and so do I. But there is a God, and he has the answers. Write to the Ambassador College Bible Correspondence Course. I was talking to a young fellow who'd heard the program a few times, and he was asking me a few questions, and I talked to him briefly about some of the things I'd said in the program. He said, well, you know, I've never read the Bible. And it was so typical of so many people. That's right, he'd never read the Bible. He said, now some of the things I can agree with and other things I can't, but you know, everything that he couldn't agree with was something that he'd never checked for himself. I hear people conversing about the program. Oh, I can find people talking about the World Tomorrow program almost everywhere I go. That's a fact, and I'm not trying to sound pretentious. It just is a fact that when you're buying more watts of radio power than any other program on the face of this broad earth, someone is bound sooner or later to notice it, and I think that perhaps you're noticing it at this moment, or you wouldn't be listening, would you? And so, like so many millions of other people, he heard things. It sort of piqued his curiosity. It made him think about part of it, but he'd just never gotten around to opening his Bible to any specific place when I was quoting from it and talking about it and reading along and seeing what it said. I guess that does take courage to turn off the tap when you're shaving and open the Bible, to get out of your chair, to even stop your car and jot down a note so you remember where to check it when you get home. It's so easy to get plugged in to our society again and to forget it all. But before you do it, do yourself a favor. Remember, you're a free moral agent. No one can force you. And if you get a bill, you can tear it up and throw it away because you're not going to get one. I don't know who'd send it to you. I'm not going to. And no one in any of the offices that we have around the world. I've announced constantly these booklets, Does God Exist and the Proof of the Bible. Well, now, as a direct relationship to that, the Ambassador College Bible Correspondence Course talks about why bother with a study of the Bible in the space age? Why is the Bible ignored and rejected and impugned and ridiculed by people today? Is it worthy of that ridicule? Can you prove it? What is the Bible? Most people couldn't tell you much about it. They've got a very definite opinion about it, but they couldn't tell you much about it. And isn't that pretty well true of opinionated people? Now, you know, true freedom is of fantastic worth. And true freedom ought to also envision intellectual freedom. The freedom to pursue, to track down, to uncover knowledge, factual research, historical, practical proof in certain matters of which you're in question. Now, this beginning number will show you why a study of the Bible is important in the first place. So write for this. It's absolutely free. You're going to be inspired when you see it. You'll be glad you wrote for it. It's an 8.5 by 11 notebook size, so you can put it in a loose leaf notebook, and there is no obligation and no follow-up. If you get the first one and decide you don't want to continue, that's up to you. But write for it. It's absolutely free and without tuition, the Ambassador College Bible Correspondence Course. Remember the other booklets I've announced. They're free. There is no follow-up and no request for money. Send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. The address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.